Welcome to the Mindful Medicina Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanette Daniels. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor on a mission to inspire a renewed confidence in the intelligence of the human body. And joining the conversation today is my friend and colleague, Janelle Hartman, lymphatic and colon hydrotherapist, esteemed yoga teacher of teachers, and the co-producer of this show.
The word. More than a declaration, an invitation to humans created in the image of God to embrace the profound creative power of our voice. Is there a more mesmerizing, penetrating, and delightful use of the voice than singing? Singing heals both the listener and the singer alike. The simplicity of this stands on its own. But in today's episode, we will explore the extensive science behind the marvelous healing powers of singing, wandering into the realms of the vagus nerve, chakras, sexuality, and personal testimony via our lively conversation with Paulina. Paulina is a 19-year-old singer and songwriter who has marked her place in the Australian soul pop scene, having won a Queensland Music Award in 2022. Born in Germany and raised in Australia, music has always been a large part of her life. When frequently asked what she wanted to use her musical talent for, Paulina found an answer for herself: writing her own music. These songs are not only an emotional outlet for her, but also serve to inspire and resonate with other people's lives. Paulina combines her musical knowledge with her lyricism to reflect on her innermost feelings and comment on pressing zeitgeist themes which often weigh on her mind. She has the ability to write uniquely emotive songs and capture the true essence of her subjects in her purest performances. Since graduating high school at the end of 2022, she has traveled through Europe producing her debut EP, which was released in August. Now, based in Brisbane, Australia, she is splitting her time between Australia, London, and Germany to produce her second EP. We hope that by the end of this episode, you will all find yourself singing in the rain, if you live in Seattle, or singing in your shower, or singing in your car. Just lean into that God-given medicine. And even more powerful is the healing when we sing together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode where we are going to dive deep into how singing heals you. We also want to plug that singers are healers. And so today we have a special guest who is, I consider, a healer, Paulina, singer-songwriter. Paulina, welcome to Mindful Medicina.
Hi, that is so kind of you. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you, Paulina. We're doing great. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, I found you on Instagram, good old Instagram, and I don't know how it came through my feed, but you were doing
a song with, is it Tom Thumb? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Tom Thumb.
And you guys have a song together called Focus on Me. And when I was watching you guys just riff on that, I was just like, OMG, that is dope.
Oh my God, thank you.
It just really brought out my East Coast, like, gangsta. But I was just blown away by your voice. I went back and forth like, oh, she kind of sounds like Portishead. No, wait, she sounds like NDRE. And then I'm just like going through all of these singers in my head of like all these beautiful voices I've heard, and I can't decide who you sound like, but just a beautiful voice. And so I thought that we would have you on as a guest to tell us how singing has really how it came into your life, how you started singing, why you started singing, and how it's really made some great strides in your physical, mental well-being and all of those juicy bits. We hope that you can just give us a little background on who you are and where you come from, and how about start there?
Perfect. Sounds good. Also, thank you so much. That is so, so sweet of you. I really appreciate it. pretty much I just grew up. I mean, my dad he always played piano, and he studied a little bit of jazz when he was younger before. He's actually a doctor as well. So this kind of is perfect, like music and medicine. Cool. But he grew up playing piano, and like when I was growing up, he would always play piano, and we would just be downstairs just jamming. And I would just, from really early on, like I started singing as soon as I pretty much started talking, and it just always felt natural to just, you know, write random songs on the spot with him while he was playing guitar. And my mom is an absolute lover of like techno and just completely the opposite. But I've kind of had both parents really love music growing up, and it just kind of, it was always a very creative house. Like my mom also likes to paint a little bit, or she did when I was younger. And it was just always naturally a thing that I did. And I grew up playing guitar, and like at school we always every year learned new instruments, so I was always very musical. But then I remember when I was like 8, I did a singing lesson, but she wouldn't let me sing Katy Perry. It was like only old classic songs. I only did like one term of singing lessons, and then I stopped because I was like, I want to sing Katy Perry. So I pretty much, didn't really take it seriously forever until probably I was 15, and I had played a gig at school once because my music teacher that I loved, she left, and she wanted me to play in front of the school, so I did. And it was so beautiful. Like, she was crying after my performance and during it, and it was so, that day really moved me, because I was like, wow, like the fact that me singing this song had such an impact on her, but also on myself, like it just made this farewell to my teacher at the time so much more beautiful, and just I could just live in it a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. It just was such a beautiful moment where I was like, damn, I really love this. And then for a while it was like circling in my head that I did definitely want to pursue music, but it was still not 100% sure. And I mean, I was only like 14, but then when I turned 15, there was like this songwriting workshop. It was like 2 days after my birthday, and my mom signed me up because it was only like $50, and I ended up going there, and I was really sick that day too. I had like a 39 fever, but I was like, no, we're gonna do the workshop. And I ended up writing my first ever proper songs that day, and the same night at the same venue there was also like this Unearthed type of gig, and I played my first proper gig there. And honestly, I don't know what happened that day. It was just such a moving day that it just felt so natural for me to say, this is something that I want to do forever. And honestly, from that day forward, I was like, okay, I'm going to buy a gigging setup, and I'm going to start gigging, and I'm going to start writing more music properly. And then only a couple months later, I released my first song. And then, I've just been releasing music since, and absolutely love it.
Yeah. And how old are you now?
I turned 20 a couple months ago, so. Oh.
Lovely. And so do you have anyone that has inspired you to this point as far as music goes? What would you consider your genre of music?
Oh my gosh, I don't know what my genre of music is. In over the last, like, I think I've been releasing music for nearly 5 years now, and there's just been so many different genres, but definitely kind of heading into, I guess pop, bit of alternative, some like, oh, I don't know, a bit of soul in there sometimes. I know like the recent song that we did was also like a bit of trip hop, I think. Yeah, just a bunch. And I kind of like the freedom of not, choosing to stick to one genre. It's just nice to just create music, whatever feels good in the moment. So yeah.
What was your first concert that you ever saw somebody on stage doing this?
Oh my gosh, I was just turned 5 years old and I saw Crowded House. I don't know if you know them.
Ooh, heck yeah.
Yeah. I love Crowded House. Oh, and that's 100% a thing too. Like my mom and my dad, they both loved going to concerts. So like my whole life, we always went to concerts. So that was definitely a big
Were
thing.
you like the little baby on dad's shoulders?
Literally the half asleep baby.
Yeah.
Oh, it downloaded, right?
That's so cool. Yeah.
So, would you feel that it would be correct to say that you have an open throat chakra, being that you resonate so much with using your voice, that you are the kind of person who says what you mean, who says what you feel? Do you feel that that is open for you? Or does
Yeah,
it take
honestly.
singing for that?
Oh, what's sorry?
Or does it take singing to give you that voice?
Honestly, I find, oh, that's a great question. I find often that singing and like writing my favorite songs that I love the most are the ones that tell me through my like the lyrics that I write in songs kind of open up that space sometimes for me. Like I'll find at times, like for example, I'm writing a song at the moment where, and I've been writing it for months, but there's something in me that needs to be let out, like, so, and I don't really know what it is yet, but I've been gradually writing this song and it has honestly been freeing me. It's even been like releasing some jaw tension that I have. Overall, I definitely feel that music has helped me honestly, just connect with myself more, and through that, also open myself up more. Like, I feel like I live a less stressed life because of it. Or any time that I'm only doing music, all stress just completely goes to the side. Yeah, I definitely feel like that's opened me up. But also, I think constantly, I think that's actually the hardest part about it is creating music just for myself. I think I get. And I know a lot of other artists feel the same as well, that you often, when you're like writing songs or you kind of get stuck in the cycle of, oh my God, what does this person want me to write about? Or what do you think, what are these people going to connect to? Blah, blah, blah. But I think the best music is created when I can just completely silence that and just make it for myself. And then that's where it, yeah, really opens up.
And there's that sovereignty in the voice and the throat chakra. It's like being able to actually have it be authentically yours and not so connected to the tribe, something where you can really tap into your root, into your creative center. And I'm also a songwriter and a musician, and I know exactly what you're talking about. There's sometimes like a personally prophetic nature to what comes forth when writing a song that's like your deep subconscious mind has a message for you, and it's like a dream would have. And I don't know about you, but like I find that some of my songs come forth and teach me something about myself that I do have an inkling of, but it needs to, like you said, it tells you what you need to know. And then
That's it. Oh my gosh.
for years I will reflect at, like spending time with that song is almost like a child that grows and keeps telling me like meanings of the same lyrics, like they have
Oh my
more and
God.
more meaning. Does
Abs
this resonate? Yeah.
different meanings all the time. Oh my God, you were like speaking exactly what I was trying to say. No, 1,000%. And I think that's the beautiful part about it too. Like I played a show 2 nights ago, and I was talking about this one song that I wrote, I think like 2.5 years ago. And it was about like I saw people see people that they love pass away, and I wrote the song at the time from the point of view of like me being genuinely afraid of losing the people that I loved in my life, especially because I've never really lost anyone that close to me before. And but then when I was playing it the other night, I told them about the backstory, but I was like, Look, but the meaning has changed for me completely now. Now, even though it's still such a sad song, but I kind of feel it now from a different place, which is a place of gratitude, because I'm just like, damn, I get to love so many people, you know? And even though people will pass away or leave and things like that, but it's such a beautiful thing to be able to love people so deeply right now, even if you have to lose it at some point. So yeah, I definitely agree. Meanings change all the time, and it's really, really perfect.
The powerful thing about singing for other people is that what makes it different from talking is that your vibration of your vocal cords, they continue, they're prolonged. And so people can actually sense your frequency better than spoken word, like we're doing right now. I'm not going to sing. That's one of the things I'm not great at. But like if you were to hear one of us here sing, then, and we'll ask you to give us a little bit of that later, but what you do is you actually have a greater impact on the receiver, on the listener, because singing causes that frequency, that vibration to continue for a greater distance, for a greater density, if you will.
Yeah,
So,
that makes so much sense though as well. That really makes so much sense. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I don't think you can talk a glass into breaking, but you can certainly.
And also when you say, like, some songs, and like I grew up listening to Tracy Chapman so much, and she was somebody, because I'm like, oh, she just spoke her truth, especially at a time where people didn't want to hear it from a woman and a woman was black, like a person who looked like her, they didn't want to hear it from her. But she went and spoke her truth, and it resonated obviously with the absolute masses. But the beautiful thing is like, had she have just said what she wanted to, if she had just said those things spoken, you're so right, I don't think it would have been heard nowhere near as much by people connected to the level that it has. But the fact that, yeah, it was literally in her songwriting, in her songs, it kind of lets people, I find music lets people open up to themselves a little bit more as well. Like even as an audience member, like even if they don't want to hear it when somebody's saying it straight to your face, but if somebody covers it in beautiful melodies, I think people are a little bit more open to receiving some of those thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, it's sort of that voice carries and brings in your God source or that part of you that is higher soul, higher consciousness, and people can receive it. Of course, accompanying some great music as well, which has a profound effect on our soul as well as the music. Yeah, I think that reaching people that way is profound. I actually had seen Tracy Chapman in concert. I haven't seen a lot of concerts, but she was one of the, she's one of the, I'm kind of introverted, so it's like all those people, I'm like, ooh, I'll just buy the CD. I'll just buy the CD and listen to it on repeat. But I went and I saw her, and I can't believe how powerful she was just having her drum between her legs and herself. That's it. That's it.
Incredible. And that's just incredible. Oh, she's such a queen for
Oh
that.
yeah. That's a
And I love
that's
that because clearly she just knows herself so well that it just inspires you. And you can just feel it. You can feel it so much. Like I was literally chatting to my friend just after my show when we were driving home. He was like, he said the thing that he connects to most to live at live shows is when you can just feel that the performer knows who they are and is willing to go so far deep into themselves to speak their own truth, that it actually like subconsciously influences him and other people, and I feel the same, to also want to get to that level. And I think life's all about just returning back to who you really are at your core, stripped away from what society thinks you're meant to do, or your parents are meant to do, or your high school friends are meant to do, or your work colleagues. I think it's always that. I personally, I'm like, I think the golden life is to just return to who you really are at your core. And when you see that in other people, especially artists, it just inspires us to want to dig deeper as well.
That's right.
Yeah, with the singing, that's been used medicinally for quite a long time, dating back to
from the beginning of time, I'd imagine, but reportedly somewhere around World War One, World War Two, where you would have all these military people that were injured, and you would have musicians come in to the hospitals and sing for these injured military men. And the medical healing that was happening was so profound. They started to offer that in hospitals back then. And we got away from that. And mm-hmm. I mean, geez, that's why I'm saying that singers are doctors. I have this theory that anyone who can elevate someone is a healer, or anyone who can help someone to feel better about themselves, even if it's someone who cut your hair. Hey, you were having a bad day. Your hair looks great. You feel better about yourself. Thank you, doctor, hair cutter gal. But there's research. There's legit research on singing as being healing. Mm-hmm. And think about that. Before we had any medicine, no pharmacy, maybe we didn't quite understand herbology yet. What did human beings do without nothing? They danced and they sang, and then mm-hmm. they made instruments mm-hmm. out of bones and such. Mm-hmm. But it was like, I mean, even so much powerful that they can make it rain, right? Now we have...
Incredible
chemtrails. No, then we have chemtrails and harp. Get
right. That's a whole deep rabbit hole.
But you know, really, you were talking about like, you know, what this primal aspect of it, and like finding the rhythm and the instinct to sing and to make these sounds. But even to, you know, in certain tribes and stuff, and they just talk about like if there's a collective traumatic thing, like a battle or a war, or there's a big hunt or something, people come back and get together and they sing and they shake and they play and they drum, and it's a way of shaking off stress, discharging the nervous system and actually healing mm-hmm. the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And also when we are in fight or flight, we become very disconnected from ourselves and others. It becomes like survival is kind of a number one, like number one is what I'm looking out for, but it also helps to do that kind of a reconnection that just the relaxed nervous system
like
can
moving the energy as well.
Moving and energy.
Like you said, with the dancing, like yeah. I do that in the mornings. I'll literally, the first thing I do, like I usually wake up around like 4:30 and kind of dedicate like an hour to myself, because like it's just so important, like some soul time, you know, and I'll like put on live music in the living room and just like literally shake my body and tap on my body to like get some blood flowing, things like that, and Jesus, it feels so good.
Yeah. Wow. yep
that's yeah. amazing.
Get your lymphatic system going, your fascia,
yeah,
all of it.
The lymphatic system, yeah, like under the armpits, tap on the arms. It's great.
You got it, girl.
Yeah, she knows what's up.
Getting that early morning. Woo.
Exactly. Yeah.
The day's gonna go good.
True. And I think we don't do that enough anymore, like mm-hmm. at all. Like even at concerts, I'll go to concerts and I'm like, guys, let's dance. Like put the mm-hmm. phones down. Let's mm-hmm. just actually dance it out, you know?
I bet you start dance floors. Are you the first one on the dance floor sometimes?
It's like
potentially.
There goes Paulina.
Just takes
shoe.
One. Yeah. There's Paulina.
Well, I can plug the dance thing here, because though you two can sing, I cannot. Okay, look, I don't sing well. Everyone can sing.
You can make a joyful noise into the Lord.
I can make a noise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
honestly, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. So I was looking up some information on dancing as well, and it was pretty profound to see that dancing was about as medicinal as singing, actually singing with other people, as in a choir. So when we sing with other people, it actually improved the heart variability, so your heart rate, better than singing solo. Mm-hmm. And then dance was just as impactful for the well-being in a different way, because it brought in the different parts of the brain that house and hear and process music, and you're using your body now for that. So yeah, that's just unbelievable.
It also makes sense too as well if you're like singing in a choir, because it's like you're all vibrating at that frequency,
right?
You know, it's just mm-hmm. oh, that's so beautiful. It's so cool to hear that the science actually backs it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there was quite a bit. I think that dancing, what you get from that is you can feel the music, the singing, the vibration, the energy of the music. Because if say, for example, I were to turn the mute, let's say I'm dancing salsa, which is something I dance a lot. If I turn if I turn the music off and were to do the dance steps, like dance with somebody without music, it's just, I'm not going to feel much. Right. Mm-hmm. But so the body has to actually receive that frequency of voice and music. And then the body can actually feel it in a deeper medicinal way than to just move your body without any sound. I think sound at the end of the day is way more powerful than visual and movement.
I agree. Oh my gosh. I 1000% agree. I literally make it very, I like go out of my way to have good sounds in my day to day. Like I often like after I, cause I usually work in the morning for an hour or two, cause I do support work on the side of music. So I like care for this really sweet old lady. And afterwards mm-hmm. I'll always go for a morning walk and I'll put on like these frequencies of this like woman singing. I think it's like Danish, but it's just like an hour of her singing the same thing again and again. And then this guy playing this, oh, I don't know what it's called, but it's the Swedish instrument that makes these like just beautiful vibrations. And yeah, oh my mm-hmm. God, that just elevates my life by 1000%. Like mm-hmm. it's, and it calms me down as well. It's just, yeah, sound over everything.
That's right.
You have a really good sound diet, it sounds like.
Oh my God, I love that. Yes, I have a good sound diet, period.
Awesome. You know what I really like is the sound of water. So I, in my home, I have two water fountains and I have them here in the office. And so even just that is penetrating the space in a way that complete, and Janelle also has a water fountain in her space.
A giant one.
Well, and if you take that water fountain out, there's some sort of emptiness in the space. And so sound, and even Einstein said that, you know, basically that the doctors of the future would be using frequency medicine, if you will. And that's all sound is frequency.
Literally, just, oh my gosh. I mean, even you say, I wanted to say that before too, when you're saying how singing's healing and everything, I'm like a big gardener and I literally like go outside and like sing to my plants and swear to God, they thrive. And I'm a big believer that it's also because I'm singing to them.
100%.
Right? Yeah.
Because it's such an, I guess, an innate human thing to do, mm-hmm. right? Is to just sing or just let it out, like scream, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we definitely need to, as a whole, just lean into it more.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about too how pain management, you know, just making the sound groaning or moaning, or we were both mm-hmm. Sharing moments where we just instinctually went into some really deep toning and moaning, and then the inflammation and the pain kind of just starts to lift, you know, like it's amazing.
I had just recently I had to have a surgical procedure on my tooth, and this was about a week ago, and I found myself, while I was waiting to have the procedure done, I was just in such throbbing pain. The first time I've ever done this before, but I started to sort of kind of chant or hum like what might sound like a Greek song. And I don't know where that came from because I've never done that before, but as long as I was doing that sort of chanting, the pain was not there. I've never experienced that before, so I don't know what to make of that, but it was this sort of intuitive download of like, go ahead and make this frequency, this vibration with your mouth, and it halted the pain at least long enough to like get in the chair. But yeah.
That's incredible. And also surreal, you saying that as well. I literally, for example, on Saturday when I played my show, I had a throbbing headache all day. But as soon as I was on stage and like singing for the hour and a half that I was, completely went away. Wow. And then afterwards it came back. But like genuinely, I didn't feel any of it. And I find that quite often, like I said, I get quite a lot of jaw tension a lot. And but every time I'm just making music, my God, it just completely disappears.
Oh, it's my incredible. Gosh. I can speak to that when I dance because I'm kind of prone to migraines and tooth stuff. But like I'll go dancing on Wednesday nights, and if I'm having a pain while I'm dancing, it's gone. And here's why. So both with singing and dancing, it showed that you had an increase in endorphins, like this pain modulating neurotransmitters. And then also in 2017, there was research that showed that it decreased stress in the body while you're singing. So that decreases cortisol, which then decreases inflammation, which decreases pain. So there's all this research on decreasing pain in the body while you sing. There's so many benefits to singing, but yeah, that one's hitting home on me.
I'm just smiling. This is incredible. this feels so great to hear. I wish you could see me smiling right now. I'm just it's amazing. So fascinating, and it feels so right. Like it just makes so much sense. Like it doesn't shock me, you know, because it feels so good as it is. So the fact that it actually does good makes complete sense.
So I'll say this too. So as far as I want to plug something on the immune system, I found this interesting. So singing actually increased the immune system by increasing the immunoglobulin A, which is just like an antibody, but listening to music did not. You actually had to sing to boost that antibody. So I found that interesting. There's other things that come with listening to music, of course, tons of other positive health benefits. But as far as that specific antibody goes, singing was
what does it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow. Oh my God. Incredible.
You literally see. So listen to this. This is crazy. Okay, so I'm a naturopathic doctor. Everyone who listens to this knows that. But for you, in case you didn't know, I will say this, like, with confidence, that when as a singer, you are practicing natural medicine.
Yeah.
Drop the mic.
we need an explosion sound effect. But honestly, it just makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't even know the science behind it, but I'm just gonna say yes.
You know what?
Like
what,
as somebody who sings, I feel that. Like I feel that of just like you just feel like you're helping yourself, but more important because you're like I feel like I heal myself through it, so it like kind of allows me to have the capacity to also help others, you know, through it. And it's such a beautiful thing. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I would actually say that there are people who understand what I'm saying when I say that singing is medicinal and it's healing, and you know it. So you don't have to understand it. In other words, you don't have to read science, geeky stuff to know what
you feel it.
Yes,
you feel it.
It's like better for you to know
shows,
it.
It's like it's just it's I feel it in every part of me. And also when I then chat to people who are there who listen, it's you can just we just all vibrating at that frequency, you know. It's just such a beautiful
yeah, increasing that connection and that belonging to each other. And again,
so important. Yes, especially today because we are so disconnected and we're getting even more disconnected by the minute, and it's so important to lean into that more.
And I'm thinking too, even the movements in the face will stimulate different neurotransmitters.
Oh, for sure.
So while you're moving these your mouth in these different configurations, moving your tongue around your mouth, there's a I've been a yoga teacher for a little over 20 years, and I've taught parts of teacher trainings on nad yoga, which is the yoga of sound. And there's just so much about the way that just even the configuration of the face, making vowels versus consonants, the way we, again, the neurotransmitters moving, it stimulates our ventral vagal, which is so much about our safe social, our connection to other people. But yeah, I always thought that was an interesting part of it too. I love watching singers' faces.
That is a good point too.
That's
because
so cool.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, because it's 90% of communication is the facial expressions anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if anything, sometimes the facial expression says more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that vagal vocal connection. And the reason that's so powerful, and I know we don't have a ton of time here, but when we sing, we actually tonify and stimulate the ventral vagus nerve, which controls the heart. And so most people don't realize this, but the pacemaker in the heart is set to about 120 beats per minute. But people will think it's 60 to 80, but that's not true because that's a normal heartbeat. But it actually is set to around 120. And what actually brings it down to 60 to 80 is having that ventral vagal nerve being tonified and being online, if you will. So the heart is dependent on the vagus nerve really being online. Mm-hmm. And being in parasympathetic rest digestion, if you will. And so singing is probably, I mean, the number one way, right? Would you say that, Janelle? Because you know a lot about the vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really is like you just see a lot of exercises about vagal toning and things. But if you're just singing and you're intuitively aligning yourself into those frequencies, I mean, it's the same thing as looking up a YouTube video and doing a set of exercises. You know, I believe it's the same. There are certain tones that will have different specific effects on different aspects of the vagus nerve and the brain. But, you know, I'm sure that in the course of one of your live shows, you're probably stroking the whole harp there.
That's incredible.
Can you give us maybe like two sentences, sing us something beautiful, and then we're going to put in our show notes how to find you.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I might just sing like the chorus of Focus on Me. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right. How you feel? The bass hits differently. Now you're dancing. Forget the news. Focus on me. How you feeling? Come sing me melodies. Now keep dancing. Forget the nose. Focus on me.
Bam.
Oof.
Beautiful.
Mama.
We are focused on you. We're so happy to have you.
Paulina.
Thank
and we're
going
to plug
genuinely,
all.
Thank you so
we're
much
gonna
for
drop
this.
The links. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing yourself and your beautiful medicine.
No, thank you. Honestly, I wish I could chat for like hours with you guys. Ah! Genuinely, my heart is just so full right now, and it's so fascinating to just hear how it just makes sense. It just this just feels so right.
Okay, Dr. Paulina.
Yeah.
Have a good day, and maybe we'll do a part two, my friend.
Oh, honestly, I would absolutely love to. And next time I won't have plumbing issues, hopefully. Genuinely, right. Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah. Love you, girl. Take right. care.
Bye. Love you guys too. Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Feels like heaven's falling right down. Don't wanna stand here when it comes through. It's what I'm thinking about right now. Close the door, grab your shoes. Treat ourselves to a night out. An Aperol spritz will take the weight off you.
All right, well, we just had an amazingly inspiring conversation with Paulina. And Janette and I want to go a little deeper into some of the scientific and esoteric aspects of singing. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Dr. Daniels.
Yeah, let's start off with the benefits of singing. All right. There are so many, but I'm just going to give you a handful here. So one of the benefits is relieve stress. And I brought that up a little bit with Paulina, where I mentioned there was a research article from 2017 that showed that singing actually decreased cortisol levels, which we know is associated with inflammation. When the cortisol goes up, so does inflammation. So singing at night is great. Maybe we should start doing karaoke at night. That's literally something on my bucket list. I've never done karaoke because I'm so self-conscious about singing.
Oh, please let me be there.
Yeah, I think everyone is going to be like, I need to hear this.
You need to start making in the notes on your phone, start to collect songs that you would sing.
Right.
And then just practice singing them in your car or whatever, and then just let it rip. We're going to do this.
I'm like already I'm in fight flight. Okay. Okay. So number two is that it singing increases the immune function by way of increasing the immunoglobulin. It will also decrease anxiety and depression. It increases the endorphins. So these are the neurotransmitters that help with pain and oxytocin too. Mm-hmm. So this is why moms will sing lullabies mm-hmm. to their children, right? So you increase that bonding between mom and baby or dad and baby. Also increases oxygen levels. So singing is actually really helpful for patients or people with COPD or asthma.
I just wanted to hop in there and say, if you think about it as well, when you're singing and you're holding, maybe you're singing a long note, that is a very long exhale. And a long exhale will put you into the parasympathetic state.
Mm. Yeah. And I heard that it's impossible to actually inhale, right, when you're singing, right? So, or talking. And that's why, like, teachers, when they're done talking, you often hear them take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so another awesome thing that singing does is it increases memory and recall. And so they're finding that with Alzheimer's patients, singing can help, and also them hearing other people sing will help with memory recall. Mm. But it will prevent memory loss with the singing. So that's pretty amazing. And then also snoring. So if you can sing regularly, even if it's just 10, 15 minutes a day, that actually strengthens all of the muscular tissue in the trachea and the larynx. And that helps to tonify all of that, keeping the tongue from sliding back into the throat.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So those are just a handful of awesome benefits of singing. One of the most amazing and most relevant things that singing does is to help tonify the vagus nerve, which we're going to get into in a little bit. And Janelle will school us on that topic. But for now, let's kind of nerd out on where do we find, what centers in the brain are housing music and sound? So there's the motor cortex that's involved in music-related movements, including dancing and playing, just playing music in general. Sensory cortex processes tactile feedback when dancing or playing instruments. The auditory cortex analyzes the sounds and the tones. I'd imagine that area is affected when you're watching a movie. If it's scary, you're going to analyze, is that a fight-flight sound or is that a relaxing sound?
Mm-hmm.
What I do on shows, because I've gotten so sensitized again to negative TV, that I can't watch something that's scary or
violent
threatening.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if that scene comes on, a scene comes on like that, I have to turn the volume off and I can watch the scene just fine.
Mm.
That's how powerful sound is. It's like, try this at home. Is if you're watching a scary movie, just turn the sound off and you're going to actually watch the movie and you're going to go, that's kind of corny. Okay, visual cortex, this area, this is in the back of the brain. The visual cortex is stimulated when you're reading or watching music videos or watching other people dance. The amygdala is where you're going to have enhancement of memories or emotional experiences. Again, I think that would be kind of equivalent to like if there was a sound that was really scary for you as a kid, mm-hmm. maybe.
An association.
Mm-hmm. The hippocampus is involved in music and memories, experiences, and context.
I call that part of the brain like the big warehouse where all your memories are stored. And
yes.
The secretary that goes and runs and grabs them and brings them up.
That's where the filing cabinet is.
Yeah.
And then the good old cerebellum, which I lean into quite a bit as a dancer, is it helps process and regulate rhythm and timing. What I found really super fascinating, and Janelle, as a musician yourself, I'd be curious to see your corpus callosum, because...
Show me your corpus callosum.
I'll show you mine if you show me yours. So the corpus callosum divides the left and the right hemisphere, and that area is larger in musicians. Uh-uh. So you're really bringing in the left and the right hemisphere when you create music. So what's really important about this, that music is in basically all over the brain, right? It's being processed in different places. That's really great, because if there ever was a lesion to one area of the brain, you're not going to lose music or sound or dance. You're not going to lose it all. And that's how memory is in general, where most people think memory is in the hippocampus only. Memory is everywhere, all over the place. And so what they're doing with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's patients is they're actually improving their memory and also coordination and balance with dancing and singing. So music therapy is a huge medicinal, I guess, venue these days. And they're really using it in cognitive disease states when nothing else is working. So that's pretty amazing. So going back to the benefits list, I mentioned the vagal vocal connection. So I just wanted to talk about that, because what we find is that the vagus nerve is, frankly, probably, in my opinion, probably the most important nerve in supporting a human, really, because it's connecting the brain and the heart and the gut. And it is controlling the heart rate. So where the pacemaker is in the heart is usually timed at around 105 beats per minute. And the heart is actually receiving signal from the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve then sends or slows down a signal to the pacemaker, the SA node is what it's called. And it slows down the heart rate to what you would hear your doctor say is normal, is 60 to 80 beats per minute. So if someone has a fast resting heart rate, like above 80 or 90, one of the things you'll want to do is to find out if they're in a perpetual state of sympathetic drive or fight flight, if they're stressed out, if they're having anxiety. And one of the first things that you can have them start doing is singing. And that singing can help reestablish the pace of the SA node. And what's interesting is if someone was in an acute situation with a heart attack, one of the things that they tell you to do is to either sing or hum. And that can actually help pull you out of that AFib situation, or if the heart is arrhythmic, if you will. So I found that pretty fascinating. But yeah, so the vagus nerve, super, super important. And singing is right up there, probably top one, top two things to do to tonify that nerve. So if you would, Janelle, if you want to go into the ventral vagal vocal connection at all.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, and you just mentioned, like, in this emergency situation, it's recognized that singing or humming can create this big change and stabilize and bring you back to homeostasis. And there are massive amounts of studies done on the humming, just that that just with the lips closed, that has one of the biggest effects on bringing us back into the parasympathetic state. Now, there's a lot of Western scientific studies on that, but the yogis taught, that was called Brahmari breath, or the bee breath, and that's been taught for thousands of years and recognized as being a practice that brings you into that deep state. And I think it's really amazing, because the vagus nerve It does have this incredible effect on coordinating so many of our physiological functions, but it also connects with our social, our spiritual, and our just our state of being and our state of presence. And so it unites all of those things together. It literally is kind of the mind-body connection or the heart-body connection. And so the vagus nerve, there's a seem to be like a whole two different circuits. We mentioned the ventral vagal circuit is the one that brings us into that more of a socially connected, they say safe and social when it is balanced. The dorsal, the one that kind of goes more towards the back of the body, the dorsal vagal function is more about fight or flight, bringing us into, and sometimes they say fight, flight, and freeze, but it's interesting that the freeze is actually like a deeper primal parasympathetic thing. It doesn't really have to do with the sympathetic or the fight or flight. It's different. It's like after you're in that fight or flight stage for a while, then you go into a deeper part of the parasympathetic that brings you into that freeze state. So that's kind of sometimes a little bit of a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a transitional space.
Now, one of the things in nature that serves is that we see it in possums. Playing dead can maybe get you out of survival situation. Going into freeze can sometimes turn down your personality if you're in a traumatizing situation, if you're in an abusive situation. It can actually make you kind of disappear a little bit more. And this sounds a little morbid, but it also brings you into a place where you're even like your sensation is deadened. So if you're if you're being eaten by a bear or you're being killed, you're going to more readily go into a state of shock where you're not going to feel everything. So it's kind of a mercy thing as well. It's very interesting that we're designed that way. But oftentimes if you see somebody who's really in their dorsal, not in that front ventral, safe and social place, that there's a bit of a frozen affect. A lot of times in the eyes, in the face, the mouth will droop. It's interesting that the area around the mouth and the expressions around the face and the throat are signaling that we can look at another person and it's kind of like that, they call it, what is it, like metadata or just micro data that we're taking in. Oftentimes we're looking at people's eyes, but there is a part of us that is tuning into the state of the tension in the mouth and the throat that will show us kind of where somebody's at. It's one of those social cues that it's very tacit, right? And so what's interesting about that, and we know that smiling and making these gestures with the mouth, as we discussed with Paulina, like I was saying how I love watching people sing, because as they do different configurations with their mouth, they're activating different neurotransmitters, different circuits, they're getting different effects. But that is going to actually stimulate our brain. And so a lot of times when somebody is very much in their ventral and they're in that sort of an outgoing place, you'll see their face is animated. There's a lot of movement. And I do want to say this too, is that during the quote unquote lockdown, where we were told we had to wear these masks, we were covering the exact part of the face and part of the throat that allowed us to signal and connect with one another. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's almost like there was like by design, you can have people out and about, but their ability to actually get the signal from others has been impeded by this mask. You know, it's just another layer of, you know,
that's so on point too. And what I find really interesting is that we make it such a point to say that you should look someone in the eyes when they're talking to you, where really a lot of the information is coming from the mouth. And I find myself looking at people's mouths more than their eyes. I'm getting a sense of their feelings from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see the tension in the jaw. Mm-hmm. You can see if the scalenes on their throat are tense. Mm-hmm. Like somebody's throat, I mean, we're talking about the throat chakra, right? So there is a huge amount of expression there. You know, does that bring us into the chakra discussion?
Yeah,
the throat chakra.
Yeah, we can definitely go into the chakras. Yeah, so as far as the singing goes, each chakra has a different sound that you can sing, or a different key that can stimulate health and wellness, or a stuck chakra, if you will. So Janelle, yeah, tell us a little bit about what you know on chakras.
Well, the chakras, like, it's very interesting because they end up showing up in different traditions. I think the one that we're the most familiar with is the colorful depiction in the yogic tradition. You'll see a lot of times that's what you see most often, but there are many, many cultures that have that clairvoyant sense of these energy centers and can feel, and oftentimes, you know, if you look at all the different writings and studies on those, they agree on what these different centers hold for our psychology and for our greater faculties. And the sounds and the tones of the chakras also, it's very interesting to see like the different interpretations of what those sounds are. So of course, you know, there's like the Western musical scale has its notes that it attaches to it. There's vowel sounds in the Egyptian tradition. There's the lam, vam, ram, yam, ham, sham, om. That's kind of like, if you're into yoga, you've probably heard those in some of your yoga classes or in your studies. But the chakra system is really a journey from the root of the body, which is really about your basic, your the structure of your body, your connection to tribe. And then that second chakra, the sacral chakra, has so much to do with how then we then go out of just that our identity being with the tribe, we start to make connections outside of that. We actually start to express ourselves. We have this budding sense of wanting to make connections with things outside of us. And this is where a lot of our subconscious, it's symbolized by the moon, which is kind of a symbol of our subconscious mind, is it's the really the ocean of where we can pull from our creativity. Paulina and I were talking about songwriting and how there's this prophetic kind of a source where things come from. That's like your second chakra. Yeah. And then we go into the third chakra, which is that fire element, the solar plexus. That is our sovereignty. That is actually us as humans, like really what our mission is. It's, you know, in Sanskrit, the name Manipura means the city of shining jewels. And it really is like the jewels that we have come here to, even like the richness that we've come to bring to the world. It's uniquely us. The heart then that sits right above it. It's almost like that's a sovereignty, is a pillar the heart sits upon. And, you know, the heart is this green color. It represents the air element and how we really unfold. And this is a greater sense of connection than to the world and the gifts of healing and receiving. And then, of course, above that is the throat chakra, which is a reflection of all, almost like the wind is moving through all of these different, like a flute of all these different chakras together. And then our throat chakra is this very refined expression that we have. In this way, we see that sacral chakra, which is also our sexuality and our deep creative reproductive force, is connected to the throat. So when a young man starts to mature, you hear his voice change, the larynx. And they say the larynx is like another womb. And we can see that indeed the larynx has the same shape as the vagina. If you put the images side by side, like a womb that creates. And so much of our expression and our ability to manifest comes from the center, right? And then the third eye is kind of what steers us, our inner vision, and the crown, of course, connects us. But it feels like the whole, the point and all the other chakras are sort of babysitting the solar plexus, the heart, and the throat are kind of like the project of a human, you know? And those are the ones where we find that there's a lot of imbalances that can come up. But the pelvic floor, even at the mula or the root, Muladhara is the name of that root chakra, the pelvic floor and the diaphragm there actually has a connection to your respiratory diaphragm. As your respiratory diaphragm drops down to let breath into your lungs and lifts up to press breath out, it's also moving and fluctuating the root of your body. And then your there's another diaphragm in your larynx and around your vocal cords, and that's also moving. So in yoga, we talk about the bandhas, where you activate the mula. You kind of do kind of a drawing up, upward lock on the mula. You can do that. It's called Uddiyana Bandha when you do it with your diaphragm. And then it's called Jalandhara Bandha when you do it with your throat. And basically, it helps to circulate energy between those three diaphragms, your reproductive center, your kind of center of yourself, and then your throat. And so I've always felt those as a very interesting connection as well. And when you look at all of these structures, they do look very similar.
They do. Beautiful. We have a photo here.
We'll put it in the show notes.
It's just so beautiful.
We'll definitely stick that in the show notes. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and the diaphragm just above the belly is every time you take a nice deep breath, which apparently your breath is not supposed to be coming from your chest or even your belly. It's supposed to be coming from, right, your pelvis?
Yeah,
right.
Growing up.
So every time you bring up that diaphragm, you're actually massaging the vagus nerve.
That's
and
right.
And that sets it into parasympathetic. So mm-hmm. outside of singing, taking nice pelvic rooted breaths will massage the vagus nerve,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're having a panic attack, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So there are some positive affirmations with each chakra. The crown chakra is I know. Third eye is I see. Throat, I speak. Heart, I love. Solar plexus, I do. Sacral, I feel. Root, I am. Mm-hmm. And I am is the most powerful sentence in the universe. Mm-hmm. So be mindful of what comes after I am.
Yeah, well said. Yeah. I did want to talk to just a little bit about something that I've been connected to for about 13 years now in the yoga community, and it's the practice of kirtan. And kirtan is a very old yogic practice of call and response singing. And the name of the official name of kirtan is Harinam Sankirtan. And Harinam Sankirtan, Hari is the name of God. And Hari is God, Nam is the name. So Harinam is the name of God. And then San is like Sangha, like gathering together. And so the idea is singing the name of God together. And in kirtan, there are musicians and singers and like who are in the lead and kind of calling out the chants, the names of God or lines from scriptures or something really elevating that creates a really good frequency. And then those who are practicing kirtan there, the sangha, is singing back. And so it's back and forth, bathing each other in the frequencies, celebrating this call and response, calling, it's like calling out to God and then being responded to. So that's really, I feel like the safe and social when you're surrounded by people singing and there's the call and the response. It's like being a child and crying out and having mother come. I always mm-hmm. feel that I just feel so comforted when I'm in that place. And I'm a drummer, so I'm up there and everybody out there is singing back at us, which really feels good. Mm-hmm. But another thing that's happening is that I mentioned that I teach a bit of nad yoga and nad yoga is the yoga of sound, and part of that is looking at how mantra, manas means mind, and tra is like refinement or protection. A mantra can protect and refine the mind. And so when you repeat these ancient Sanskrit, which is a language made of prayer, it's like ancient Hebrew and some of these other languages that are actually prayer languages that really deeply affect your, not only your mental state, emotional state, but your physiology. When you chant these things over and over again, or call out the names of these deities, which are just representations of different aspects of one God. So don't be afraid that, you know, if you're a Christian or if you have if you identify with a religion that you're praying to another God, you're not, because Hinduism is actually henotheistic, which means that it's one God, but they recognize that there's many different aspects, much like in the Hebrew tradition, Jehovah Jireh or, the different 72 names of God. There's one God, but we're just recognizing mm-hmm. these different ways that God shows up. But anyway, so there's something really beautiful about being in a group of people. It doesn't matter if somebody is a great singer or not, it's making a joyful noise, being bathed by others, being feeling safe enough to be in that space that you can call and respond. So look for kirtan in your area. Usually you'll find some at a yoga studio. It's very healing. I know a lot of people who have had a lot of trauma come and they feel it's like they can be in a group of people. They're not singled out, but they get to sing. They get to absorb those vibrations. And I've just seen a lot of healing over the years for people who may have been in that frozen state, and you just watch people unfreeze. Wow. It's one of the most beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know parts of me, I think, were a little frozen before I found kirtan too. It's really nice.
I think what's nice about that too is if you're a little anxious about singing solo like I am, because you just kind of you identify as not having a great, you know, set of vocal cords, if you will. So that would be a great place to start for someone who actually wants to start opening up their throat chakra, because you're then singing with a bunch of other people and you can sort of feel like you're being, you know, drowned out, but you're actually practicing it, right?
That's right.
And that would be a really great place for me because, you know, like I said earlier, I've never done karaoke. I have a thing about doing things I'm really good at, right? And yeah. But what are the implications of me not using my voice that way, and how that relationship is connected to the pelvic floor and the vaginal tract? Like, both of these are closed for business. So it's like, I think I would like to just encourage everybody to, you know, to really, if you can't do, you know, maybe choir or get involved in some community singing, that'd be great. And again, the polyvagal theory is what they call it. Polyvagal theory, theory and community singing is extremely important for immune function. You actually, honestly, what they should have done during COVID was to have everybody get into the churches or on the streets and everyone sing together, because that actually increased immune function to sing in a group as opposed to solo. That's powerful.
I was, it's interesting because I'm gonna give a shout out to Rob and Melissa, who I play with. I'm the drummer for them. I'm very
Hi,
proud
guys.
Of that. Hello. And you know, they knew it was important for people to continue to sing during that time. So they would do Zoom kirtans, which was interesting because people would be in their home singing at the screen. But I thought, you know, and it was interesting because I did hear this story over and over again that people found kirtan during that time. And so their relation to kirtan was call and response singing with just themselves and Rob and Melissa or whatever kirtan group would be doing that online, and then coming to their first kirtan. And I witnessed this many times, coming to their first kirtan where we were all back together again, and being so used to just being with their own voice, which actually probably was very healing for a lot of people. But then to just join their voices with everyone, and what a flood of healing.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes me want to kind of tear up a little bit when I think about that.
Yeah, it's really super powerful for the heart center, emotionally and physically as well. As I noted, that singing with other people improves heart variability. So if there's any cardiovascular issue, this would be something that you could do, and it's free, and there are no negative side effects. So yeah, I think that should be a wrap, and maybe we should wrap.
Oh my god, just spit all over my mic.
I want you to focus. I want you to focus.
We hope this conversation has empowered you. Remember, you are unique and you are a miracle. Your body doesn't make mistakes. It responds perfectly to an imperfect environment. Until next time, go get that life.